Class is in session. You're listening to Squat University by Dr. Aaron Horshick.
Let's go!
Now, let's start the show.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Thank you so much for checking out today's show. This is episode 13 of the Squat University podcast. The goal with each and every one of these shows is to bring you as much value-packed content to help you move better in the gym and in life, decrease your body's aches and pains, and help you reach your true athletic potential. Today, we're going to jump back into talking about the anatomy of your body in a way that relates to how you move and lift weights. Now, just like in episode 11 and everything else I do with Squat University, my goal is to explain all of these technical and scientific materials and different things that we can learn in a way that every single one of you can understand and take something away from the podcast and not bore you to death and leave you falling asleep while listening. Before we get started, though, for those of you who would like to attend a Squat University seminar, I have a two-day event scheduled this September 1st and 2nd, upcoming this fall, in Toronto, Canada. The first day of this course will be packed with a hands-on assessment to help everyone expose their individual movement flaws that hamper technique and limit performance. Different corrective exercises will be shown to address each and every one of these flaws that we find to help rebuild your lifts efficiently. The second day will be more on the injury management side of things. We'll go over how to screen and fix all the common aches and pains that we find as barbell athletes. Now, I don't get a ton of time to travel and perform seminars due to my crazy schedule treating patients here in Kansas City. So this will be my only big seminar this fall in 2018. So I would love to see you guys there in Toronto. If you want to learn more about the event, check out the seminars tab at the top of my website at squatuniversity.com. Now, with that being said, let's get to some fire content. The title of today's class will be Squat Anatomy. Now, as coaches, we often have this standard setup for teaching the barbell squat. Most people, we say, you know, your toes should point, relatively out to the side at about a 10 to 12 degree toe out angle. Your feet should be around slightly around shoulder width stance. And, you know, most people should be able to squat to at least a parallel depth, if not further, depending on the requirements of their sport. Now, this is all based on the premise that everyone has an ideal amount of mobility in textbook anatomy. But unfortunately, this doesn't always work. Not everyone squats the exact same way. As a coach, as a physical therapist, I'm sure every single one of you guys have run into the frustration of when you're trying to teach someone how to squat. You're like, this person is just not getting it. We're stretching, we're trying to teach and give cues, and for some reason, this is just not looking good. As an athlete, I'm sure there's many of you out there that have tried to read all the different cues that you can find on the internet, all the different things to have a perfect and ideal looking squat. You'll see some of these athletes with just perfect technique, and you try to emulate them to the best of your abilities, and things just don't look the same. Well, this is because while we have the standard set of coaching cues that work for a large majority of the population, there's no one size fits all approach to squatting. Now, this is for a couple different reasons. There's two main factors that dictate how your squat should look whenever we talk about the stance that you take and the depth that you can achieve. Now, the first is the factor of mobility. Now, this is based on the pliability of our soft tissues, largely, which is the muscles and the fascia that surround your body. Fascia basically is a sort of like a spider web of connective tissue that sort of runs around through and envelops your different muscles, and how these different muscles and fascia interact to change the way we move. So for example, when our tissues are stiff or shortened, they can hinder our ability to move well. If you have really stiff tissues on the backside of your calf muscles, it's going to limit your ability to squat deep. This is one of the reasons why sitting for 8+ hours a day is so harmful on your body, because you're never using your body to its full potential. So your body adaptively becomes stiff. So the whole motto, if you don't use it, you lose it. It's very true for so many people. Now, yes, there are going to be some people who are just freakishly mobile. Everyone knows someone that can sit around all day long, and then the second you ask them to stand up and bust out an Astrograss pistol squat, they can do it. You know, they can do it like nothing. These people are born with a gift for mobility. However, there's a large majority of us who are not. So we talked about mobility is based on the pliability of our soft tissues, muscle and fascia, also the ability of a joint to move through motion. For example, if someone has a restricted ankle joint, the bones aren't gliding as they should. Maybe you had a history of sprained ankles. You can have a restriction in the joint itself that can limit your ability to move. Now, the second factor in dictating stance width, toe out angle, the depth that you can achieve is your anatomy. Now, this obviously is the way your bones are formed in a line. This is something from birth that changes as you grow, and something that genetically you are just born with, something you cannot change unless you're gonna try to have surgery. It shouldn't come to a surprise to many of you that we all have different bone structures. So my best friend is not gonna have the same bone structure as me unless you have a twin. Most of the time, everyone's gonna have a little bit different bone structure. If you take a second, look around at the gym that you're at next time you're training, look at the different sizes of people. There's some people with extremely long femurs. There's some people that have extremely short femurs and a long torso. There's some people that are 7 feet tall. There's some people that are 4.5 feet tall. There's very different anatomy types out there. So mobility is obviously something that we've discussed in depth in many previous podcasts and in a ton of the content that I've shared all over social media. By improving mobility through soft tissue work like foam rolling, stretching, or improving joint movement when restricted through exercises like a banded joint mobilization, for example, we can often see huge improvements in technique. And a lot of people could benefit from mobility work. This is why the word mobility has become such a big buzzword, within the past decade or so. However, for some individuals, they just can't seem to get that perfect ass to grass squat or achieve that flawless pistol squat, no matter how hard they try. For some people, no amount of mobility work will change their squatting mechanics. When an athlete has a problem with their squat due to anatomy, they will always be fighting an upward battle if they're trying to get their squat to look like that perfect ideal squat they may see over Instagram or other social media platforms. This will be apparent when we have a closer look at the hip joint. So let's talk about the hip joint first. So this part of the podcast, let's call this Anatomy 101. The hip is a basic ball and socket joint. The end of our thigh bone, called our femur, is shaped like a small ball, basically. And it fits within the socket, which is called your acetabulum. So there's a socket on the side of your hips, and it fits together. As you squat, the ball of the femur rotates in the socket, and the femur is allowed to flex or come towards the chest. So think about this. If you lay on your back and bring your knee towards your chest, most people should be able to bring their thigh in a straight line almost all the way to touching their chest. This would be considered normal hip mobility if you looked at a textbook. Now, for all my exercise science and medical nerds out there, this is about 130 degrees roughly of hip flexion, depending on the person, how much soft tissue they have or how much muscle or fat that is surrounding that area. However, not everyone fits this textbook bone structure. Variations in the way our body and our hips specifically are formed will impact how we move, especially in the squat. For example, during that last test I just described, if you could not bring your knee all the way towards your chest in that straight line before you felt like a pinched or black sensation in the front of your hip, but you could just take your knee and bring it out to the side and bring it towards the outside part of your shoulder so you're angling your thigh, if you could now bring it closer or further towards your head, that's sort of cluing you that you may have a slightly different hip setup. Basically, your anatomical structure of your hip socket may not be textbook normal. Now, in 2001, there was a group of researchers from Japan that took a closer look at the hip joint anatomy. Now, while a large majority of people had that normal hip socket where the bowl or acetabulum socket opens up slightly at an angle forward, close to 40% of people did not. Now, some people had hip sockets that opened or pointed more forward towards the front of the body. Others had hip sockets that opened more laterally or flat towards the side of the body. Now, some sockets will be very deep, like a deep bowl with tall sides, and others will be very shallow, almost like a plate with curved edges. Now, according to research, there's actually about four distinct shapes that the socket can take, and each of these shapes will have a dramatic effect on how your body will move, especially when we're talking about the deep squat. Now, it's hard to predict who will have these different shapes. Now, we think a lot of this has to do, obviously, with just genetics. You're just born this way. For example, I was reading in one of the books that Dr. Stuart McGill wrote that he's found in his experiences that certain countries are sort of known to have genetics that present with a much deeper hip socket, while others will have quite the opposite. Now, the depth of your hip socket, for example, will then affect things like depth of your squat, making some people more prone to having hip impingements because of the front of their femur will run into the front side of their hip socket sooner during the descent than others. So this is why some people will have a hip impingement or FAI, femoral acetabular impingement. They're more prone to having that FAI just because of the anatomy, the way their body was set up. This is something that they were born with. Now, on the opposite hand, this is also why some athletes can just naturally sit ass to grass in the bottom of a deep squat without any butt wink in a perfect upright chest. Now, we can obviously look to some examples today of, for example, some of the amazing weightlifters from China. You can see many of them. And obviously, there's other things that come into it as far as torso lengths and femur lengths. But you can see many of them can squat ass to grass all the way down, perfect upright chest, no butt wink at all. Genetics, especially the anatomy of the hip, play a huge role in this. Now, let's talk about a few other reasons why someone may have these differences. The second most common factor is the shape of the femur or thigh bone and how it connects with the hip socket or your pelvis. Some people have a variation in the way their femurs are shaped. So, for example, some of us have femurs that are almost twisted forwards and backwards. Now, if you look at the way your femur is naturally set up, if you look at an anatomy book, the head of your femur, the ball part, is actually almost connected with the rest of your thigh bone at an angle, just a slight angle forward. It's not completely flat. However, there are going to be some people that have a femur that is more angled forward, which is called an anteverted femur. And then you'll have some people that will have a very flat one that is also called a retroverted femur. And together, depending on the shape of the hip socket, the acetabulum that we just talked about, you will have a retroverted hip or an anteverted hip. So both of those factors can come into play to whether or not you have a different set of anatomy than that textbook thing that you would see if you just opened up your normal anatomy textbook. Now, how do you know if you have either of these? Well, we can start by just assessing hip rotation. Now, you can do a quick self-assessment of this rotation. Just sit down in a chair, and then what you're going to do is rotate or pull your foot in towards your other foot as far as you can, which is hip external rotation. And then you can also rotate or push your foot out to the side away from your body. That's internal rotation. Now, if an athlete has a ton of external rotation and basically no internal rotation, or on the opposite, has a ton of internal rotation and a tiny amount of external rotation, that's sort of your first clue that there may be something wrong, or not wrong, but different anatomy-wise. Now, what I just described there while you're sitting and doing it yourself, that's called active motion. If you have a friend, you can have them sort of move your lower leg out to the side and back while you're relaxed, and that's called passive motion. That's actually will give you a better idea of whether or not you have a limitation either way, because active motion also requires you to have a certain amount of strength to move your body. So you could have really weak internal rotators or external rotators that could sort of disguise the fact that maybe you have a limitation in mobility either way. So having a friend move your foot either out to the side and back is the best way to really see if you have a limitation in hip rotation mobility. Now, in order for a femur with excessive angle to fit correctly inside the hip socket, the rest of the thigh must be rotated. So for this reason, athletes who have an anteverted hip will appear as if they have an excessive amount of internal rotation and a very limited amount of external rotation, just because that's the way the body will normally move. Now, what does anteversion or retroversion have to do with the way you squat? Most people with anteversion will have a hip that shows almost the classic pigeon toes. Basically, their toes will point in more. This gives most people that have antiversion the ability to squat with that perfect straightforward foot, if not 100% straightforward foot. That's just natural for their body. They can put their feet naturally 100% straightforward and sit all the way down. It's because their body has allowed them to do so. Now, the same thing will naturally happen in the opposite direction with a retroverted hip. So when you have a retroverted hip, again, either at the femur or at the hip socket, your leg will naturally point out to the side. So you'll have more of that classic duck walk. Your toes will be pointed out to the side more at an angle whenever you're walking or when you're squatting. That's just natural for that person's anatomy. Now, it's a little hard to know if someone has a natural twist in their bones just by looking at them, whether or not it's anatomy or if they just have really crappy mobility, because some people will walk with their toes turned out to the side, appearing like they have a retroverted hip just because they have horrible mobility. So we have to obviously figure out a way to screen for the body to figure out if it's a mobility issue or if it's an anatomy issue. Because forcing an athlete to conform to that ideal squat technique with the toes just relatively turned out, feet about shoulder width apart, you know, forcing them to squat to that ideal technique when they have a different type of anatomy and not just a problem in mobility can be disastrous. If an athlete reports feeling uncomfortable with their squat stance, no matter how much mobility work they do, they may be experiencing this issue in anatomy, and they should for sure be screened to see if that's an issue. So how do we screen? While the previous way of assessing hip mobility I discussed a minute ago, where you're looking at the rotation, is a great way to just assess possible mobility restrictions, it doesn't give us the best idea of what's going on with bony anatomy. It's just sort of a clue that we should look further into it. If there was a large difference in the amount of internal versus external rotation on that leg, we should go to the next step, which is assessing joint anatomy. And we can do a very simple test. It's called Craig's test. Now, I'm going to describe it right here over the podcast, but if the picture that I'm painting with my words today is not the best and you're still like, dude, I have no idea what you're saying, go on my YouTube, Squat University on YouTube, and there's a video under that. Just type into the search bar, Squat University Anatomy or Craig's Test, and it should pop up, and it's a very easy explanation so you can see the visual of it. Now, here's how you do it. You're going to start by laying on your stomach, and one of your knees is going to be bent to 90 degrees like an L. Have a friend take their hand and put it on the outside part of your hip, and they're going to be feeling for the where the femur, the notch of the femur, basically, it's called the greater trochanter, is located on the side of your hip. With their hand, they're going to begin, or with their other hand, they're going to begin rotating your foot in and out towards the middle of your body and away towards the outside of your body. Now, as you rotate the leg in and out, the person doing the testing should begin to notice with their opposite hand that's on the side of your hip, they're going to feel for that notch of your femur becoming more and less prominent against their hand. They'll want to stop moving your lower leg, your foot. They'll want to stop it when that position of the femur, the notch of the femur, is most prominent into the side of their hand. That's where you want to stop the foot, and we're going to assess where you find that. Now, ideally, or what we would call textbook normal anatomy, will leave the lower leg and foot pointing only slightly away from straight up and down. So maybe 10 to 15 degrees towards the outside of the body. If the athlete has their lower leg now positioned at a very large angle, so all the way facing towards the outside of the body, they likely have an antiverted hip. If the foot ends up straight up and down, or even back towards the inside part of the body, we can say that is a retroverted hip. Now, this is obviously looking at femur and or possibly the hip socket. This method of assessing hip anatomy, called Craig's test, is extremely reliable. It's a great test. Some researchers have even shown that it's better than taking an x-ray of someone's hip and detecting those anatomical changes. So go on YouTube, check out this test that I showed, try it and see what you find. Now, if you have a positive Craig's test for antiversion or retroversion, you may be asking yourself, what the heck does this mean for my training? If you have this, it means that your anatomy is going to affect your foot angle likely and the width that you are comfortable with in a squat. Now, some athletes can naturally squat with a very wide stance. You'll see some athletes, that'll take this extremely wide stance, and they can still squat pretty deep. And other athletes, they're going to have to be pretty narrow in order to squat deep, because if you have their feet wide and they try to squat deep, it's going to feel like their hips are basically breaking off in the middle. So some people, especially those with hip antiversion, are going to have to squat with usually a more narrow stance and or with their toes extremely straight forward. Others, like those with a retroverted hip, will often have to turn their toes out at an angle in order to reach full depth. So especially those athletes who have retroversion, I was talking to someone over Instagram DM the other day that was asking me about their squat, and his toes were actually turned really far out. And after I showed him this screen, the Craig's test, he showed that he had a positive for retroversion. So no matter how much stretching he did at his ankles or at his hips, he's gonna always have a more toed out angle in his squat. And that's okay, because that's normal for his body. Now, this is also assuming that the changes in anatomy are only occurring at the hip joint. And this is where things obviously get a little complicated, and why it's sometimes very important to go and get screened by a medical practitioner, a doctor, a medical doctor, a chiropractor, a physical therapist, an athletic trainer, a coach who's been very educated in this, because the body's actually a little bit more difficult than it seems. The body is so crazy that not everyone with hip antiversion or retroversion will present those exact same ways. For example, while some athletes with antiversion will show that classic pigeon-toed alignment, like I said, and will be able to squat to a perfect full depth with their toes perfectly straight forward, this isn't always the case. Some people will have their lower leg bones, like their tibias, adapt and change so that they don't have that pigeon-toed look. This is something that happened when they were young and their bones were forming. Basically, their tibias almost twisted outward so that they would have the appearance of a normal, relatively straightforward foot walk. This outward compensation twist, basically, of the tibia was in compensation due to the inward twist of the femur. So from the outside looking in, or looking at that person, it may appear that they have normal anatomy when really they still do have antiversion. And understanding this can really change how that person's going to feel comfortable in the bottom of their squat. This same thing happens with retroversion. So someone with a retroverted hip will often have a very exaggerated toe out position with a squat. However, the body again can adapt and change like crazy, and other bones as you grow, like the tibia and your lower leg, can appear to actually be relatively straightforward because the tibia will then twist inwards. So obviously that's a lot. So what the heck does that all mean? Basically, an athlete's stance should be dictated by comfort. They need to feel stable with whatever stance they're taking, and they should not have pain. Athletes who try to conform to a squat stance that is not right for their body will feel a hard blocking sensation in their hips or a pinching sensation in their hips that is unrelieved with mobility work. This is your body telling you to move differently, and you need to listen to it. Now, this does not mean that you still should not do mobility work. In fact, I'd argue the opposite, in that many people would still benefit from mobility work. So don't, overhinge your entire squat technique only based on the fact that you have a different set of anatomy if you found something with that Craig's test. But understand that anatomy can play a huge role in how you squat, or how you set up for a deadlift or a clean, in terms of your stance, your toe out angle, and the depth that you can achieve. So while there is a general guideline way of teaching the technique of those lifts, there's always going to be some variation from person to person, and that's okay. If you have excellent squat technique, congratulations. However, if you struggle to perform a squat with perfect technique, even after hours upon hours and months after months of mobility work, it may not be your fault. Some of us are born with ideal anatomy for deep squats. Some of us are not. Just because your anatomy may not be on your side, however, for squatting, doesn't mean you should just hang up your weightlifting shoes and just quit trying altogether. You only need to understand that what works for your body may be different. You may need to make some adjustments in order to reach the potential that your body was created for in doing that movement. So that is it for today's podcast. I hope the information provided today was able to help give you a little better understanding for how your body works so that you can be empowered to take control of it and find your ideal squat stance for lifting so that you can perform to your greatest potential. Again, I want to thank every single one of you from the bottom of my heart for listening to today's podcast. It means so much to me to have your attention for this short time. It's been great hearing from each and every one of you this past week on Instagram and on Twitter about the show. I know many of you follow me through Squat University on Instagram, but if you don't follow me on Twitter, jump on that at Squat University hash is the tag on Twitter. Tweeting me is the easiest way to reach me, and I love engaging with each and every one of you. So again, thank you for listening to today's show. I hope you enjoyed it. Until next week, guys, happy squatting.
That's it for today, class, on Squat University by Dr. Aaron Horschig. For more exclusive content, log on to squatuniversity.com.